Ma'am? Ma'am, look. I've already explained this to you 3 times. Your husband cannot come in today. Your husband is clearly sick. Well, ma'am, maybe you're not disturbed by the fact that your husband is throwing up blood and biting people? But we here at Disabled Land are, so we're not going to let him in. No, you know what's more worrying? The fact that the people that he's biting are also rather quickly throwing up blood and biting people. So, no, he is not coming in today. And you are not coming in today. And when you go and get your husband fully vaccinated, and maybe even, wear a mask so that he can't bite people and spew blood anywhere, everywhere, then we can talk about it. But until then, no, it never ends. But it is time to open the gates to Disabled Land. I am Wes of Disabled Land, your humble host. And today, we are going to talk about the thing that so many people are just tired of talking about. That's right, the Big C. And we're throwing down a trigger warning here, because we're going to be talking about the Big C. No, not that Big C. No, not that Big C. We're going to be talking about COVID. But no, we're not going to be talking about COVID now, no. We are going to be talking about, or I guess, not having a conversation because I don't have a guest this week. We are going to be talking about my experiences during the pandemic. Because there's this whole series that I want to do throughout Disabled Land where I talk to people about their experiences during the pandemic. And yes, we all know the pandemic isn't over, but it's also hard to not talk about it like it's the past, because let's face it, the planet of the Ables has moved on. And since we are all trapped on the planet of the Ables, the pandemic gets talked about like it's the past. But we are going to talk. I am going to talk. We are going to talk. As a community, we are going to talk about some decisions that I made fairly early on in the pandemic as a disabled person in 2020 and why I made those decisions. And some of you may call me foolish. Some of you may even call me selfish. But I still believe I did the right thing, not just for myself personally, but as a disabled person at large. And I'm going to try and get into that. First of all, you need to know some things about your humble host, Wes of Disabled Land. I have, still now, but much of my life, a large amount of anxiety. And I have always joked that I have what you could call, or what I called, apocalyptic anxiety. Apocalypse anxiety. I could almost have been a prepper if I believed that there was hope. My whole life, the zombie movie always seemed like something that could just be around the corner in reality. 9/11 didn't shock me. It made sense that those towers could fall to the ground in a pile of dust. There was just a lot of anxiety in my life about the end of the world, about things falling apart. And in 2020, that was there. But the thing is, when you know you have anxiety about the world falling apart, and you know that you're paranoid about plagues and pandemics and zombies and wars and rumors of wars, you start to ignore it. You start to think it is just in your head. What is in your head? Is it zombies? And you don't really pay attention anymore. But 2020 was different. I had heard the rumors early in January, like everyone else did, the rumors of a virus in China. Well, this was nothing new. We had had SARS almost a decade before, and these rumors just seemed like any other rumor. In January, shortly before my birthday, I went and spent a week with my nephew in Northern Ontario. His mother was going away on a brief 2-day trip, and I went and looked after him. I was there for a week, but on the bus ride there from Toronto, Ontario, my bus stopped off at Pearson Airport and picked people up. Right out of the airport, right off the plane, international flights from all around the world. People that were going other places by Greyhound after getting off the plane. And I remember sitting on that bus, thinking to myself, there's a strange virus going around. That if they say it hasn't spread yet, it's probably already spread. But I tried to not think anything of it, because once again, paranoid person. So about a couple weeks later, I'm back from Sudbury, and my best friend and I take a postponed my birthday trip to Niagara Falls that February. We went, and everything was great. Everything was wonderful. Wonderful trip. Didn't know it would be the last trip we'd be taking for a very long period of time. But the trip to Niagara Falls was a wonderful trip. And once again, it crossed our minds here and there that there were these rumors of this virus, but paranoid person tried not to think much of it. A matter of weeks before all hell broke loose, or as I refer to it as, the world ended, the world as we knew it ended, my best friend took a brief 3 or 4 day trip to New York City. I was a little concerned because there were rumors. Once again, there were always rumors. You never knew how serious this thing was. Something was clearly going on, but nobody really knew what. You were getting weird little tweets out of China, but that wasn't a lot. And once again, paranoid person. Try not to think too much of it. But something didn't feel right. Then one day, tweets started to come out of people just laying down in the streets in China. You must remember that, right? People just passed out in front of public transit, people laying on the sidewalk. And I admit, I didn't really know what to think about that. That was almost making me skeptical, because that almost looked like some sort of internet challenge to me. It didn't seem natural. It didn't seem right. It didn't seem real. It seemed like maybe there was some weird hocus pocus going on. And I thought for a minute, maybe this is all just being blown out of proportion. Because once again, you weren't really getting any major reports yet of it in the West, or at least we weren't being told in the West. Then came the moment I knew we were fucked. I can tell you the moment I knew, personally, we were fucked. This was not a game. This was not a joke. This was not a social experiment. We were fucked, and I knew it. There was a piece of video that came out on Twitter, if you remember what Twitter, if you kids remember what Twitter was back in the day. Came out on Twitter, this video, and it looked as though it had been smuggled out or recorded in secret, and it was inside a Chinese hospital. And you had seen pictures of, like, people in spacesuits and that, and bodies in hallways and things, and for some reason that just didn't seem real to me. It still seemed like this could be mountains out of molehills. But there was this footage of the I don't know, common area for medical staff, one of the back rooms at a Chinese hospital, and all the orderlies, all the doctors, everyone are just dead silent, exhausted, except for one woman. And I don't know if she was a doctor, I don't know if she was a nurse, I don't know if she was an orderly. She was in scrubs. One woman screaming uncontrollably as if someone had set someone on fire in front of her. And that was the moment I knew we were screwed. That was the moment I knew this was real. It just cut me like a knife. Thought to myself, we're fucked. So we reach March of 2020, and it is March break. My nephew was supposed to come spend a few days with me in the city from up north. He's with his dad. And they announced that they're going to be shutting everything down. Shutting down at least all the tourist attractions. His dad calls me, says, yeah, this stuff is going on. Do you want me to still bring him over? Do you want me to just keep him? And I said, no. I'm not going to take him right now. Get him back up north. Get him the fuck out of the city. Something is not right. Something very bad is coming. I don't know how bad it's going to be. I don't know if they're going to lock down travel between cities. We don't want him trapped here in Toronto. If all hell breaks loose, get him the fuck home up north to his mother. Whatever you got to do that, make that happen. Do it and do it now. Didn't know it would take almost a year to see my nephew after that. Knowing that lockdown was coming, knowing that everything was about to get shut down, I think they had announced it that, like, in 24 hours, everything was going to be shut. Restaurants were going to be shut. Everything was going to be shut down. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but we had warning. And this was before any other kind of mandates as far as masks or anything like that. I went out for one last coffee at my favorite cafe that I go to work at all the time to do my work, whatever I do as far as like t-shirt work, things like that. And I go, I get my coffee, I sit for a little bit, but everything feels weird. Nothing feels right. I feel like there's a massive change coming and that apocalypse anxiety is rolling hard, only this time it's not in my head. It is in the street. It is actually happening. And I can't tell you how absolutely disconcerting it was to literally have the shit in your brain starting to come out in the real world. The shit that you're always telling yourself isn't real, and all of a sudden it's happening in reality. It is terrifying. So really not knowing what was going to happen next, I took a walk. Now the coffee place I work at, I don't have a job there. I go there to do my work. That favorite coffee place of mine happens to be in Union Station, which is the big train terminal in Toronto. So buses come in, trains go out, buses go out. Thousands of people every day. I took a walk through. It was virtually empty. I did a walk through just to get a little bit of exercise, just to try and take this moment in and chill myself the fuck out. And then I saw this woman sitting in a chair waiting for her train. She was sitting there waiting for her train with suitcases. And this woman was sick as fuck. I don't know if she had COVID, because I don't remember what the COVID numbers were there. All I remember was that what they were saying the COVID numbers were. I figured if they were saying there was 500 confirmed cases, there was probably at least 1,500 cases. But this woman was letting out a cough that terrified me. And I scurried my little disabled ass home, not by public transit, took the kick scooter, scurried my little disabled ass home, and barely came out for a few weeks. Lockdown begins. That next day, I think. Within 48 hours of that experience, but I think it was the next day. My apartment, despite the fact that being a ghetto-ass slumlord building, I joke that I have a Roach motel with a $250,000 at least view of the city. I'm not super high up, but my view is still relatively unobstructed is the word I'm looking for, unobstructed. And it is, I have a complete view of the of downtown Toronto. I can see the core. I can see all the landmarks. I can go to the CN Tower and see my balcony, basically, from the CN Tower. Can see the Sky Dome, everything. So I watched the city as this was happening. Planes stopped flying. I saw it because you see planes. I go down my balcony every day. You see planes taking off, planes landing, planes flying over the city, jet streams crisscrossing. No more. One night I went out on my balcony and I realized, because the business district didn't have people in it during the day, there was no one cleaning at night, most of the lights in the big skyscrapers in the business district were turned off. Never came back on for months. It wasn't just in my head anymore. It was reality. And on top of that, it was also deathly quiet because my building had been purchased a year and a half before this by another company. And they weren't so much kicking people out, but as people left, they were not filling those apartments. They were renovating those apartments. They were not filling them. So the building was a mess of renovations. I was one of three occupied apartments on my floor. I didn't have anyone beside me on either side. I didn't have anyone across the hall. I didn't have anyone above me or below me. So my whole building was deathly quiet on top of everything else. So this was all a very strange experience, as you can imagine, especially for someone who was terrified of the world ending, whose entire anxiety was based around apocalyptic scenarios like this. And I'm trying to tell this story fairly in depth because partly because it's key to certain choices that I made down the line, but it's also because I am going to be asking other people to come on and tell stories about the pandemic that were much worse than mine. And I figure if I'm going to ask them to share, I need to share as much as possible, as in depth as possible. So it was a good 2 weeks before I went anywhere major. And by major, I mean more than a block from my apartment. I got out every couple, not even every day, every 3 days I went out. I just kind of laid low, doom scrolled the news like most people, tried to get updates, finally purchased Spotify so that I no longer got the Ontario warning alerts every 5 minutes about the pandemic through Spotify, as if I needed the reminder. We interrupt the program for a special feature I like to call What Happened to You, where I give you a completely bullshit story that you can tell a total stranger that demands to know what happened to you. Well, I really don't like to talk about it, but, you know, since you were so polite about it. So when I was 19, my 19th birthday, actually, my drunk Uncle Bob decided it would be a good idea to take me to the strip club. And everything was good. It wasn't really my thing, but you know how they say, don't touch the strippers? No, wait, I didn't. I kept my hands to myself, but drunk Uncle Bob just couldn't help himself. And he jumped up on stage. Now, this might not have been such a disaster for me, but he decided to do it when Big Merla was on stage. And I'm not fat shaming here. I like fat bottom girls. Everything's good there. But it's part of the story. Merla was about 350 pounds, soaking wet. And she was soaking wet because she did her routine, a little bathtub that they rolled out for her on wheels. So drunk Uncle Bob just can't control himself anymore at the sight of soaking wet Merla, right? And he jumps up on the stage and he starts trying to grind on Merla, and she's all slippery. And before the bouncers can even grab my uncle, Merla grabs drunk Uncle Bob. Now, drunk Uncle Bob is probably 175 pounds at the time, before the cancer got him a couple years ago, rest in peace. And she picks up drunk Uncle Bob, knocks the beer bottle right out of his hand, picks him up. I swear to God, the woman gives him a pile driver right into the bathtub. And drunk Uncle Bob is desperately trying to come up for air, and he can't. Then she picks drunk Uncle Bob up in her big, meaty paws, soaking wet and soapy, slippery as... It was like watching King Kong, like a shaved King Kong. And drunk Uncle Bob was the airplane. So she picks up drunk Uncle Bob over her head and throws him willy-nilly into the crowd, all out there with the dollar bills. Now, I'm a good nephew, and I'm not impressed with Uncle Bob at the moment, but I'm a good nephew. So I try to break drunk Uncle Bob's fall. And when I say that man hit me like a freight train, last thing I remember before I blacked out is the sound of most of the bones in my body breaking. And then I wake up in hospital 3 weeks later, because they had me on so many painkillers and shit. And you know what? Drunk Uncle Bob, you know what he has gone and done? Drunk Uncle Bob went and married Merla. Now, I gotta call her Big Aunt Merla. What? You don't... That story doesn't make any sense? Oh, you think I wasted your time? Well, then maybe you shouldn't have asked. And now you have a completely bullshit tale to tell them when they ask, "What happened to you?" We now return to our regular scheduled program. I didn't go out much for probably the first month until I was really kind of forced to go out by having run out of frozen food. Now, a lot of people were getting everything delivered. Just everything delivered. I know people that didn't leave their house, home, or apartment for months. But every time I went out, every time I ventured more than a couple blocks in my house, and I did take one breakdown and take one ride downtown, away from people, not on public transit, once again, taking the kick scooter, the glorified skateboard. I did go downtown once. And there was nobody. It was dead. The business district was dead, which is also disconcerting. It was like the London scene in 28 Days Later. But I realized most of the only people I saw out were people that didn't have a place to go, were the homeless. But even more than that, the only disabled people I saw other than myself in the streets were homeless. Were out there because they were sleeping on the street. They had nowhere to go. Or if they had somewhere to go, they had no way to feed themselves So they had to panhandle. They had to beg. And trying to panhandle when there's no one on the fucking street has to fucking suck. And that weighed on me. Not so much the homelessness thing. What weighed on me was the fact that the only disabled people out there were homeless. The only disabled people that were in the streets, the only disabled people I saw for weeks, the only other disabled people I saw for weeks were there because they had no place else to go. And I know the argument for many disabled people would have been, just stay home, just stay home. And it wasn't like I wasn't scared. I wasn't one of those people that thought the virus was fake. I accepted that the virus might be the end of the fucking world. I was terrified. I had made decisions that if I got it, I was still just going to stay in my bed and hope for the best. I wasn't going to try and get into a hospital. I didn't want to die alone in a crowded room of other dying people on a fucking ventilator. That isn't how I wanted to go. So I accepted that any risks I took would come with consequences. And that those consequences may have been me dying alone in my bed or on my couch rather than going to a hospital and dying alone on a vent in a hospital with no one being able to see me or talk to me. So it wasn't like I didn't think this was a big deal when I made these choices. I want to make that clear. I wasn't flippant about this. I didn't want to go and get a haircut. Other than going grocery shopping, I didn't want to be inside anywhere. But I felt like if disabled people just stayed home, then if the world did move forward, the answer would be, well, the disabled can just stay home. I felt like if disabled people were not out there being represented in this new world, and let's face it, it became a new world. The virus has not gone away. We're just living and dying with it now. If I didn't do that, and if we as disabled people didn't do that, then we'd just be forgotten about. It was about representation for me. It was about not being out of sight and out of mind. Because disabled people already had a visibility problem. And quite frankly, we have a visibility problem now because a lot of us still are hardly going out. And I get that. I get that some people don't want to take the risk. And I am not suggesting anyone that does not want to take the risk doesn't take the takes the risk. And I did precautions. I tried to mask. I stay in as open spaces as possible. Even when I'm indoors, I try to make sure that they're big indoor spaces without necessarily a lot of people. I don't like crowds anymore. I used to. I don't anymore. But I made it a point to go out and do my own shopping once a week and then every couple days. I stopped trying to buy 2 weeks worth of food in advance and started doing 3 or 4 days. And then every 3 or 4 days, going out and getting some things. I started trying to get fresh produce again because I was sick of frozen shit. I started going out and trying to get exercise and pushing the distance I would go just to be seen as a disabled person in this world so we would not be forgotten about or only represented by homeless beggars. And that is not disparaging the people that got caught up in the pandemic like that. It was just, that's not all what we are. And we can't just be represented like that. We can't let the disabled community be pigeonholed into that because that makes it too easy for the planet of the ables to just write us off. And I refuse to be written off. You may have learned that about me throughout the last few episodes of this or through my Instagram content as you follow me from there. I refuse to be written off as a disabled person. I refuse to not have my life mean something or to be belittled, or to be shut away and hidden and forgotten about. Because A, I don't think it's any way to live, and B, I don't think it's any way to live as a disabled person. But I also couldn't bring myself to have my groceries delivered for another reason. And that's because then I'm just passing the risk off to someone else. And I got in a fight with an old flame about this. And I ended up blocking her on the socials because I just didn't want to deal with her shit. She had money. She lived in a building with a concierge. Concierge, yeah. And she was having everything delivered. She worked from home. She was having everything delivered. She had not left her house in months, which is fine and dandy. But every time she had something delivered because she didn't want to leave her home, she was asking someone else to leave their home and do it for her. For I don't know what those delivery people were getting paid during the pandemic, but I promise you it was not enough for the risk that they were taking on a daily basis, going out and picking up other people's things and delivering them all over Hill's Half Acres. That is not a job I would want to be doing, and it's not a job that I would want anyone else to do for me. So I started going out, masking up. I had already purchased at the very start of the pandemic. I purchased a... Actually, no, I... No, no, I bought the steam cleaner like a year before the pandemic. Because I had also, a year before the pandemic, got an infestation of bed bugs. And I tell you, they say that poison and shit is what you need to get rid of them. No, no, no. You steam clean the fuck out of everything. Daily, and then weekly, and then monthly to make sure they don't come back. That's how you get rid of bed bugs. Still, have your place sprayed because it probably helps. But the way you get them off your bedding, the way you get them out of your mattress, A, you buy the special mattress cover things and you lock any living ones in there, and B, you steam cleaning the fuck out of everything. It's the best way to kill them. But back to it. I was steam cleaning every box that came into my home. I was steam cleaning my gloves after I got home. Not rubber gloves, but like just the gloves that I wore. I was steam cleaning. I was steam cleaning my jacket. I was steam cleaning every fucking thing that came into the house. Hell, I steam cleaned chocolate bars and ice cream for a while. Quick little shot. Just a little cleansing. I did everything I could to try and stay safe. Except for just staying home. I did everything I could to try and make everyone, keep everyone else safe. And I didn't go near people. Other than I had a circle of one person, my best friend. So in the expanding thing, it was like my best friend, her mom, and her boyfriend. And I didn't see them. I only saw her. But, you know, she saw them. So that was how big my circle was. My circle was one person and then two other people outside of that. That was it. And my best friend was the only hugs, bodily contact I got for like a year and a half. But I couldn't just stay in. B, because, and we'll talk about this in another episode, I was probably going to hang myself if I did. And A, because we needed that representation so badly. And to quote Brittany at the Mother podcast, Bitching and Bonusing, I will die on this hill. We as disabled people could not just stay hidden away. We had to take, and we still, even now, not stupid risks, but I'm sorry, a lot of people in the community may hate me for this. We can't just hide. This is the world now. As much as we hate it and should hate it and do hate it, the world belongs to COVID. It's here. It's not going anywhere. We're not stopping it. Nobody wants to stop it. Nobody is trying to stop it on the planet of the ables. It just exists. It exists in the world. You do your best you can to protect yourself. But if you're just hiding away to think that life is going to get better somehow, that it's just, you know, if I just stay inside another year, COVID will go. It's not going to go. It's going to get weaker. It's going to get stronger. It's going to fuck people up one way or the other. I have somehow, almost magically, I feel like, still been COVID free. I have no idea how. All I can think is that the one thing that, well, no, the two things are, I very, very rarely ride public transit. I take, when my nephew is in town, I take public transit. So there are like 2 weeks out of the year where I take public transit on a regular basis for a year, for a week during the year. 2 weeks. Other than that, I take public transit maybe 3-4 times a year. I'm not on it. I ride, because the way sidewalks are in Toronto during the winter, I ride the kick scooter year round. And if the sidewalks are too icy to ride, I don't go far from home. I really don't. And the other thing that I think has kept me from getting it is I have gone clubbing once since the pandemic started. And I didn't enjoy it. And I'm sure I'll return to it eventually. But I had no urge. So I haven't been clubbing. I don't ride public transit. And I think these are the two things that really saved me. The cafe I go to work at is in a busy train station, yes, but it is in a big, open, high-ceilinged, lots of ventilation train station. So I don't think, I mean, I'm sure there's a risk there, but it's more minimal than most places. I have a good friend who has gotten COVID twice. Takes all the precautions in the world other than not leaving the house. Masks up a whole lot more than I do. Gotten it twice. I very well may have been out with them the day they got it the first time. Didn't get it. I have been unbelievably lucky. And I know that luck will run out eventually. And I know COVID will probably kick the crap out of me. I've got the latest vaccine in my veins. I've gotten vaccinated every 6 months since it was able to get vaccinated. I wear a mask most of the time inside in public places. I am not perfect. Every once in a while I don't, or I forget to bring one or whatever. But I don't, really, that's the biggest chance I take. I don't take a lot of chances. I don't go a lot of places. And my life has just changed. And I see a lot more. Most disabled people I've seen have gone back to living their lives as best they can. Because we need to. The world has moved on. It's not right. It's not the way all of this should have happened, but it was probably the only way it was ever going to happen on a capitalist planet. The world has decided to live with this COVIDian monster and just try and live with it. Just exist with it. And it sucks. But ultimately, if the disabled community does not also try to find ways to live with it and learn to live with it, and I know it's hard to live with something that will kill you if you get it. And I completely understand that. I don't know that it won't kill me if I get it. I genuinely don't. I'm vaxxed to the gills. That doesn't give absolute proof. I'm 48 years old. It might kill me if I get it. I don't know. It might damage me and then something else kills me. I don't know. But what I do know is that when the world has moved on and is going about their days as if it is 2019, the disabled community has to do that too. Because let's face hard facts. If COVID taught us anything, is that the world has no problem leaving the disabled community behind. The Planet of the Ables has no issue whatsoever with just leaving us behind. Whether that means we die, whether that means we never leave the house. And I mean, really, if disabled people are not going out into the world, if disabled people never leave the house, that works for them. Because if disabled people were never leaving the house, if the only people you see in wheelchairs out in the street are people that live on the street, well, there's not a lot of need to build accessible buildings anymore, is there? There's no need to put ramps into restaurants if disabled people are no longer going out to eat, if they're just staying home. There's no reason to retrofit museums so that disabled people can go to museums if disabled people are never leaving the house. It's win-win for the Planet of the Ables. They don't got to do shit. And on top of that, they just cut your funding anyway. So they don't have to do anything. If we want to make the decision as disabled people to choose not to live out in the world, that is fine for them, because that means they don't have to make a world that accommodates us anymore. They can just let us stay home. Let us disappear out of sight, out of mind, forgotten. And that is why I couldn't do it. That is why, let's say it straight, I risked my life. I knew every time I went outside for 2 years, that might be the day some motherfucker coughs in the elevator. That might be the day some weirdo at the grocery store goes Karen and spits in my face and infects me like a goddamn infected fucking zombie. That might be the day I get it some other way. I walk past the wrong person. My barista is sick when I was finally able to get a cup of coffee again. I knew every time I went out there were risks. But for me, it was worth the risk. And I tried to make sure that I only took risks for myself. And I'm going to have, I thought about calling this series, this little series, Inside Disabled Land, COVID Year One or something, but it's going to cover more than that. It's the first year that really interests me for this podcast. There are people that I want to bring on, one that I've already asked, a couple that it might not happen until season two, because they are larger names with larger followings who do a lot of things. And why would they want to be on this tiny little podcast that no one has heard yet? But I'm hoping for season two, I will be able to get them. And it's going to be disabled people. It's going to be able-bodied people. Like I've said, this podcast, I have not wanted to just say, oh, well, if you're not disabled, you can't be a guest. It is always going to be a mix on this. And sometimes the issues are going to have nothing to do with disability on disabled land. If it's something I just want to talk about, I'm going to do it. Because the content isn't going to create itself. But there are COVID stories I want to tell. And if you have a COVID story that you want to tell, I'm hoping that you will contact me. This was a moment we lived through history. We are still living through history. History doesn't stop. I had a history teacher in high school, Mr. Montgomery. He and the other history teacher there probably kept me from becoming some kind of school shooter. I don't mean literally. He said that, you know, people talk about history as, oh, it happens in loops. History repeats itself. He said that's not true. What history is just one goddamn thing after another. And I've learned in the last 5 years, he was right. It's just one goddamn thing after another. You just live through it as best you can. And if you're listening to this, you lived through it. You made it this far. And that was all you really had to do. I think it is time that I shut this down for the night. I have to admit, I have not been feeling super well lately. I have had some medical tests done. Some things are being looked into. Answers to that will happen long before this airs, but I'm not against saying that I'm not completely sure I'm not losing my gallbladder soon. And on top of that, my knee is screaming, kind of like that nurse was in that video today. I'm not too happy of a camper. But I have been west of Disabled Land, and this has been Disabled Land. You can find me on Instagram at Wes_of_DisabledLand. You can find my merchandise at disabledland.threadless.com. You can find the mother podcast, Bitching and Bolusing with Courtney and Brittany, at bitching_and_bolusing. And Courtney and Brittany's merch at bitchingandbolusing.threadless.com. And if you would like to support the building of inclusive school playgrounds, support the Recess Project at therecessproject.org or the Recess Project on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.